Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcasts12. Just go to Indeed.com/podcasts12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcasts12. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Upgrade your laundry routine with a durable and reliable Maytag laundry pair at Lowe's. Like the new Maytag washer and dryer with performance-enhanced stain-fighting power designed to cut through serious dirt and grime. And what's great is this laundry pair is in stock and ready for delivery when you need it the most. Don't miss out. Shop Maytag in-store or online today at Lowe's.
Everyone, welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Sam.
And we're going to talk today about all of the therapy terms that we see being thrown around online. Specifically, I think it's become more and more of a trend of people, I hate the word weaponizing, but I don't know what else to call it, weaponizing these like therapy terms.
Yeah. I think too, just as a side note, I haven't recovered from the fact that you think the picture of sadness from Inside Out behind me is an owl. So to anyone
listening, it looks like an owl.
So in my office, a couple of years ago, I went to Disney.
Yeah.
And Disneyland. And they have Pixar Pier in California Adventure, yeah, that part of the park. And this is like – was sketched by like a Disney artist.
Aww.
And it has like a seal on it, like official, yeah, whatever. So I got it framed and I have it in my office. And Amanda, I literally said just 2 seconds ago, like, I think I need to get a new frame for sadness. And she was like, what are you talking about? And I said, it's sadness from Inside Out. And you're like, that was an owl. And so now I'm just imagining I have this picture of an owl. But anyway, regardless, just wanted to drop that in. Therapy speak. I think if we're going to talk about therapy speak, mm-hmm, and this idea of like weaponizing, I think we also need to define, what does weaponizing mean?
Yeah. We can weaponize the word weaponizing.
Weaponizing.
I think that's a really good point.
I think that gets thrown around and, mm-hmm, people don't really understand it. So when we are talking about this idea of weaponizing something, right? And even in one of our earliest episodes, it was weaponizing boundaries.
Yeah.
It means you are bastardizing it, like shifting it, manipulating it, changing it somehow to make it fit your needs.
And even a step farther, you're, yeah, using it as a weapon. Like you're using it to harm,
yes,
someone else.
Yeah. You're using it to justify something. You're using it to dismiss something. You're using it to avoid like accountability or, yes, acknowledgement of wrongdoing.
Or get what you want.
Yes.
I think that's a really common thing of, right, yeah, when we talked about the weaponization of boundaries, it's saying no, or having, you know, saying this is my boundary, mm-hmm, as a way of controlling other people, mm-hmm, or getting what you want in a situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of also implies a way that something that isn't inherently harmful, but then you take it and you can use it to control or cause damage, mm-hmm, to others or even manipulate them. And I think a lot of it, you know, that is sort of, as we're talking about the definition of weaponizing, I think we're not even saying necessarily that people are doing it on purpose.
Right.
Which maybe then we shouldn't use the word weaponize. But I think people inadvertently are using, mm-hmm, these terms incorrectly, and, mm-hmm, other people are using these terms incorrectly so often that we totally lose like the plot of what the original thing was about. Mm-hmm. And that's what gets so hard. And there's actually something that I really love that helps us understand this. there's a term called concept creep. Have you ever heard of it?
No, I haven't.
It's this idea of sort of like how a concept starts with a certain definition, but as it's in the lexicon, as it's part of the zeitgeist, as it's part of how people communicate,
it shifts.
It creeps more and more a certain way. And then it's really hard because some people, you know, and I think this is interesting because we had that episode about people pleasing being manipulative. And obviously some people hate the word manipulative, get very frustrated by it because they think the word manipulative only means like intentional malice.
Yeah.
Where we also talked about how, you know, manipulation can sometimes be inadvertent.
Passive.
And I think that is part of what we're also talking about too, is just how it's hard when you're having a conversation with someone in person or online and you think you're talking about the same topic, but because of concept creep, you're maybe talking about a word that has multiple definitions or has changed its definition.
Yeah, like I could see how any kind of like disorder, like, like mental health disorder would fit within this. Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's so broad, like everything that could fit into this idea. It's basically just like society is a game of telephone and everything becomes like warped and
And we like don't agree on definitions anymore. And I think that is polarization makes it worse. We all have different biases and then we're more likely to believe someone if they share the same beliefs as us. And it, you know, you can spin down a whole rabbit hole. But I think specifically in this context, I'm thinking about social media and when mental health concepts become trends and how quickly that game, because literally TikTok is a trend app where someone will talk about something and they'll copy it in a different way as a trend.
Yeah, everybody does their spin on it.
And yes, and then it gets so far from what the original intention of it was. Exactly. So one thing I've been thinking about a lot lately is the concept of trauma dumping. Do you remember, I think it was like a year or two ago, where there was a therapist that was on TikTok who had said like, oh my God, my client was just trauma dumping on me so much. And she said this and then it's,
I didn't know this.
This happened a couple of years ago and it sparked this whole rightfully so backlash of people being like, oh my God, what? I'm trauma dumping on my therapist. And they were all concerned about it.
Isn't that the whole point of what we're doing?
Yes.
Ma'am.
Yes.
Ma'am.
Yeah. And thankfully, other therapists came in and said what you said and corrected this narrative. But it's something that has started popping back up again. And I recently was writing about it because, like you cannot trauma dump
on a therapist.
On your therapist.
That's the whole point of the space.
Exactly. But it's, I think it shows that people don't even know what the word means. So maybe it would be helpful for us to kind of get into what actually is trauma dumping.
I'll give you an example of what it is not.
Yeah.
Why don't we start there?
Okay.
So I'll give you a personal example. The other night, I was catching up with one of my nearest and dearest friends from elementary school. Anyway, we were like catching up and we were going back and forth and we were talking about, you know, what was going on in her life, what was going on in my life. And we started talking about jobs and she, last year, a friend of hers died of cancer, very young. I want to say it was like 40, like right around there. And we were talking about that and, you know, processing it. And she was talking about how gone out to dinner as a group and we're talking about it and stuff came up again and we were talking about grief and I started talking about like some things that I went through at the hospital and sharing some experiences there and how that impacted me and, you know, kind of talking about life and emotion. And so the reason I highlight that is because even though we were communicating about things that were equivalently traumatic and difficult in some ways for us, there was a layer of vulnerability and intimacy, mutual, shared, supported stories. There was like a buildup in the conversation to it. We didn't just call and, you know, I didn't just call her and say, let me tell you about like the worst death I saw in the hospital. Like
That would be trauma dumping.
That would be trauma dumping. this was like there was a warm up, and as we were catching up and be like kind of talking about more and more like quote unquote emotionally intimate things as the yes. conversation went on, we were matching each other mm-hmm. while validating each other and sharing like mutual experiences. Yep. And then there was a ramp down at the end of the conversation where we started like laughing about things, joking about things. Everything's fine. Mm-hmm. Talk to you in a bit. Can't wait to hear how this goes. Done. Done.
Yeah.
And I think there are some people that have confused an interaction like that as trauma dumping. Because yes. what I have seen is friends getting frustrated with their other friends that their friends are opening up to them about things.
Yes.
And I hate to break it to anyone that feels that way, but that is the whole point of having a friend.
I could not be nodding more violently.
Yeah. Yes.
Exactly. And one thing I wanted to highlight in what you said, Sam, is it's like a game of tennis or yes. pickleball, right? Yeah. It's like there's an ebb and flow. There's a back and a forth. Yeah. It wasn't just you or her barreling in.
Yep.
With a really aggressive stuff. If you're going through something and you have a good friend, yes. it also might be like talking to them and being like, I'm really struggling. And they say, tell me about what's going on.
Yeah.
And the conversation yeah. isn't super even, but the relationship is.
Yes. Yes.
And I yeah. agree. My big – the one thing, and this connects to boundaries and everything we talk about, is that we're sort of using these terms like trauma dumping in this case – to sort of shut down normal human connection.
Yes.
And we're already so isolated. We're yeah. already so Lord. Lonely. We're already struggling with real connection. And it makes me angry to think about how now the few times people do want to connect, they're afraid of being accused of trauma dumping. I saw this thing online, and this was what kind of started my rant about this online, is like, let me read you this text between friends. Mm-hmm. Someone texted someone and said, I was wondering if you would be interested in hanging out. My grandmother recently passed away last month and my birthday's this Monday, so I could really use a friend or some time. If not, that's understandable. Just let me know. And this person goes, hi, I appreciate this, but I'd like to point out what you're doing is guilt tripping. While the intention may have been to communicate clearly, it feels more like trying to twist someone's wrist into having pity for you. You're better, cooler, and hotter than that. Please don't trauma dump without consent. Like, I rescind a hangout invitation at this point. And then someone in response to it wrote, like, this is why I don't have any friends anymore. I got accused of trauma dumping for telling a friend what's happening in my life. Should I just leave this out? I don't know what to do.
The like level of rage I felt listening to that. And I bet you money, that person that texted that back and said, you're guilt tripping me. They have had conversations with people about probably feeling alone, feeling isolated, yes. feeling that they don't have friends, feeling that they don't know how to connect. Nobody's loyal anymore. There's no more yes. loyalty. Well, guess what? There was your opportunity to build some loyalty with someone.
Yeah.
That person, that was not a trauma dump. That was an explanation of why they were reaching out for some passive support.
Yep.
Keeping you clued in, letting you know what's going on. Hey, I'm feeling lonely. I'm expressing a need. Here's what's happened. Can we do something?
Well, it's also like trauma dumping is extreme levels of detail. It's yes. going into a lot of the minutiae of it. It is way more detailed than just saying
what's going on in your life.
Yeah, like my grandma died, my dog died, I got fired from work, I'm struggling with my mental health, I'm struggling with my physical health, I'm getting divorced, my child is sick. Like, those are just facts.
That's just life.
Yeah, about your life.
Yeah, everybody goes through that. Like, okay, to get maybe a little more graphic in the explanation, yes. and bear with me when I say
yeah.
that. An example of trauma dumping would be you sit down, let's say like you and a friend have agreed to like go get a coffee,
yeah.
catch up, whatever. And in that setting, someone starts talking about like intimate details around their sexual abuse as a child.
Mm-hmm.
That's trauma dumping.
Yeah. Especially without that person's consent.
Without that person's yeah. consent, it wasn't invited. The other person didn't ask, oh my God, what was that like?
Right. There wasn't a reciprocal sharing that got them there.
Reciprocal. You just sat down and said, oh my God, like me and my therapist uncovered that when so-and-so did insert whatever horrid details you want, that is a version of trauma dumping.
Yeah.
Okay. It is these unsolicited graphic details that had no pump priming, if you will, prior to coming out.
Yeah. Which is why you can't trauma dump on your therapist, because your therapist is asking you these questions.
That's the whole point of you being in that chair virtually across from me.
Yeah.
Is because this is the space and the setting to do that, to lean into those details, to discuss those things, to be raw and honest in a way that you don't want to be with the people in your day-to-day life.
Yeah, I just keep thinking about, you know, that viral theory that's going around online of annoyance is the price you pay for community.
Yes. Inconvenience too.
Yeah, I think one person said annoyance, one person said inconvenience.
Yeah.
And I think both are true, right? Like, yes, it might be inconvenient sometimes to like show up for a friend, or they're struggling and you know, are supportive. Like, I think about this in terms of being a parent, right? Mm. And even with you, Sam, like, right? You don't have children. I do. Mm-hmm. You didn't live near me when I had a child. So this isn't exactly the point, but I have friends who have kids. I have friends who don't. And people showed up for me when I had a child and it was very nice, but some of them aren't going to get that exact reciprocity back if they don't have kids.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they'll have other events in their life though. And I think there is such a toxic narrative of, well, you didn't do this for me, so I'm not doing it for you. Mm-hmm. Or I don't know when I'm going to get this returned to me, so I'm not going to give this. Mm-hmm. Where the price you pay for community is you are investing in this relationship long term. You have to think beyond just next week or next month and how quickly you're going to get this favor repaid. Mm-hmm. You have to think about it in terms of, this is a relationship that I'm investing in long term. And even I would go as far as to say, this is an opportunity for you to show up for your friend. To show how invested you are in the friendship, to show how much you care, because so many of us are very afraid that, right, people don't value us, or they don't, you know, we don't value them. Mm-hmm. And I think people are so short-sighted nowadays where, and you know this better than anyone else, because I feel like with your upbringing, how much you, and being a caregiver and stuff, I think you really get the annoyance of this all. But I think for some people who
aren't used to that.
Yeah. Like they have never had to go out of their way to help someone.
Right.
So then they've never had that given to them. So yeah, it becomes this like unhealthy dynamic where no one does anything for anyone anymore. And we need each other.
We do. I love that you like brought all of that up, and like specifically the dynamic of like me being single, no kids, you being married with a kid. I think there's a lot of discourse right now about kind of the single woman friend with the mom friends.
Did you see that article that came out?
Yeah. And I've been seeing like a lot of people chatting about it on TikTok, and there's a lot of like really strong takes, understandably so. I think anytime you start introducing like motherhood, people get all sorts of spicy.
Yeah.
But my thought on it is, I've accepted that I am in a season of life where I will be naturally more flexible, right? I naturally have more time, more space, a little more freedom. Like I can be adaptable to things quickly.
Yeah.
And what I've realized is that is not me betraying myself, being honest about that. Now, what I can do is be like intentional around the boundaries I have with my time, right? Yeah. Like if there's a night I want to have off, I won't go out with someone, right? Like if I'm too tired, if I've had too long of a day, that's just as important as the person that needs to take care of their kid, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, like as for us, like,
you
know, if we hang out or we plan to do something or we plan to have a meeting or whatever, I understand, like, I kind of let you let me know where you're willing to go, right? Like, you've come to me, I've come to you. We've met in the middle. we've done like this giant iteration of it.
Yeah.
And I think for me as a single person, what I look for in my friendships from my friends who are married or have kids, what have you, what I look for to continue to build the friendship is, are you willing to match me at the level that you're able to?
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
Do I see that there is effort that matches the season of life that you're in?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that lets me know that I will be able to trust that if I do need something or when a life event for me comes up, you will be honest about what you can and can't give, and you'll give what you can.
Yeah. Context matters.
Context matters.
Yeah.
And to not, I think this is even like a larger question, like as we're talking about like trauma dumping or context creep or, you know, this idea of like tolerating annoyance and inconvenience for community. We all need a very real reality check on our energy. And that I think there are people overblowing the amount of energy they are spending. And overblowing the amount of energy that something will require. I think there's a lot of assumptions happening in like a million different directions that everything is going to be like draining and overwhelming in the same way.
Yeah.
And that's just not accurate. That's just not true.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I've chatted about this in some episodes before where something that was really eye-opening for me, and I've seen this work in some of my clients, is this recognition that not everything requires energy from the same place. So, for example, I'll have people say like, well, I work all day. I don't want to have to go out at night.
Yeah.
To like see people or connect or whatever. And I'm like, okay, yeah. However, the energy that you need and the effort that you need to put in when spending time with friends is not the same as what you're putting in at work.
Yeah.
So, actually, to lean into that more lighthearted, less focused, less stressy energy is the kind of thing that gives you more energy to be able to focus at work and show up at work or show up for your kids or your spouse or whatever the situation is.
Yeah.
And so if we're not willing to like flex that muscle of going out of our way to do something that we know is another thing on our plate, but we know in the long run is an investment to what we need and the type of life that we want, it's going to atrophy. And everything in life then starts to feel completely overwhelming because we're not used to flexing our muscle for anything.
Hi, everyone. If you're listening to me and Sam and realizing I could really use some support with this, or maybe you have a daughter who is in her teens or in her 20s and you're realizing that she probably could use some support with this, I would love for you to check out our website, therapyforwomencenter.com. We serve 42 states online and we have 3 in-person office locations in the Philadelphia area. We're coming soon to Collingswood, New Jersey, and we will also be coming soon to Florida. So check us out and thanks for listening. The other metaphor I was thinking of too is, because I think it goes into sort of our tendency now, maybe more than before, to kind of play tit for tat with people of keeping score of how much you showed up for them versus how much they showed up for you, which I think was a necessary shift probably from people, especially women, who always were going out of their way, always were people pleasing, never, you know, always bending over backwards. Sometimes we overcorrect in that process. But I think that's one thing that's really hard is relationships can't just be tit for tat like that, because like you talked about, we all are in different seasons and the context matters. Like I have some friends who have many kids and their time is much different than my time as, you know, only having one child. And I know in a couple years, I will be in a totally different parenting phase and I will be much more available.
Right.
And I think it shows too, like we have to invest in these relationships long term and they will give back to us long term throughout the whole time that we're friends with someone. And I was thinking about this metaphor in terms of, because I know a hot topic on the internet also is, you know, finances. And we're really excited that Chelsea Fagan is going to be coming on the podcast soon, and she's going to talk more about this. But I think there is this conversation I've seen of, on one end of the spectrum, people expecting their single friends to spend tons of money, or especially right on their weddings, their baby showers, their bachelorettes. There's so much money that can go into that, that someone who is single and maybe they're never going to have children or whatever that is for them, it does suck. And you can talk about this more than I can, obviously. I also think that there can be like reciprocity in recognizing that we can find ways to meet in the middle. Like you can show someone support. You can, just because your friend can't go on the same like lavish vacation as you doesn't mean they're a bad friend or they're not prioritizing your relationship, or if they can't afford to come to your, you know, bachelorette and wedding or whatever, that they're bad. It's like, how do we look at both of our lives, both of our circumstances, and compromise in the middle? Maybe this is a friend that you go to a book club with, or you try out, you go to a dive bar with, because that's more like your guys' speed. And then maybe you have other friends who are really into hobbies, and you guys, I don't know, play tennis together at a, you know, country club or something like that. Like, I think that this also comes from the place of, we're putting pressure on friendships to be everything. We want soulmate friendships. And this is something I struggled with a lot when I was figuring out friendships in my early 20s. And my life changed so much when I realized that I could have different friends for different reasons. And I can have friends who are my friends that I really – I have things in common with, who I love to, you know, go for walks with. I can have friends who I play pickleball with. I can have friends who have kids, and that is the primary thing we do together. And you can I have friends who are just so fun, and I don't go to them for like really intense emotional support, but they are the person that you, you know, just want to laugh with, and you are the one that you want them at your party because they are the life of the party and they bring so much. And I think the world would, and our mental health would be so much better if we recognized that we need a wide group of friends, because we're complicated and no one is going to fit all of our needs perfectly. And that's so much pressure to put on a few people.
That was a very detailed explanation of a community.
You need community.
You need community. And I love that so much, because I think that just gets, we miss out on that, that it's okay to have rings to our life.
Yes.
And different people fit in to different rings. And there's some people that find their way into the inner sanctum, and then there's other people that are just out in ring seven hanging out, and occasionally, like, we know they're there, but like, you know, we know there's people in ring two and three and four and five. Like, you're absolutely correct when you say, like, we don't need the soulmate as a friend. Sometimes you're lucky enough to find that, like, that that deep connection. But even if you find that, you should have more people than that one.
Yes.
Even if there's someone that, like, you have a friend that you would, like, lay down in the road and die for.
Yeah.
Which I have those.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I got others, too. You need, like, a full life. And I think so much of this language, and I think speaking as a woman, I'm just a girl. Like, I think we get so anxious about things, and we want to do things so right, and we want to be everything for everyone, and we end up like passively self-sabotaging through these like misconstrued and weaponized boundaries and expectations, and then we hear this term and we become really panicked that we haven't been aware that this is happening to us, and so then, you know, it ends up like that disastrous text message where someone's just like, hey, like, my grandma died, can you just come like hang out with me? And you're like, I'm being taken advantage of right now. Like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
And
it's also not offensive to ask. Like, no. She could have just said, no, I don't have the emotional capacity to deal with this right now.
Just say, I can't.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Don't use the word emotional capacity. It's very HR.
It sounds like she's about to get fired.
Yeah.
I, like, just it's okay to just say, hey, I can't. What if we did this day? Mm-hmm. Right? If you realize that someone is coming to you with a bit of a task, okay, and it's not time sensitive, like a move or needing to go to the airport or something, if it's kind of like a heavier chat conversation event, it's okay to offer up an alternative time that might work better for you. You don't have to make it in this whole thing where it's like, I feel like I'm taking advantage of, or like, I'm not, like, you don't need to do that. It's okay to just take an energy inventory, say, I'm not going to have the capacity for that day, but I want to show up for this person. So could we do X day?
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think there's just like so much pressure of ownership of everything while also protecting ourselves from everything. And it's just this black and white thinking that lends to utter catastrophe. Mm-hmm. And then you end up sitting across from me talking about it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to hear too, Sam, I feel like your side of TikTok is probably, or your algorithm probably feeds you more, you know, people who feel betrayed by people who have gotten married or have had kids. What does your content, like what does your algorithm look like in that lens?
A lot of it is like to sad instrumental music being like, here's all the ways my friends haven't showed up for me. like, or I've also gotten people sharing how they were the last one to do something.
Yes.
And then nobody can come. Nobody can do it. Nobody has the money.
Which sucks. And it does. Like rightfully so.
And I obviously, like in that situation, as the friend who is going to be the last, should and when that happens, I think I'm hopeful that I have cultivated and crafted friendships in my life where people will still show up for me. And I think like if I put myself in that position, like I would be devastated. And I think when I see people share stories like that, I put myself in that position and go, I'd be pissed.
Yeah.
Like I would be pissed for some of the people that I've done my best to show up for and do things for and be available and be flexible at times and all this. And then all of a sudden, magically, they can't figure out how to have the funds to do something in 6 months. Like that would be hard for me.
Yeah.
But also as someone who's been very like career oriented for a lot and done a lot, it is interesting how there's not a lot of fanfare for that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then it feels dicey to say that out loud because you sound like you're A, asking for it for the wrong reasons, or B, you're like bitter and sad and like losing sleep over it. But there's just not. Like I have quite a few friends and quite a broad like spectrum of people in my life. And there's really only like two or three that are like very verbal about, oh my God, like I'm so proud of you. I can't believe you did this. Da, 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 da. And it's okay. I've made peace with that. And a lot of them I know are like wrapped up in their own lives and have their own things going on, and that's okay. However, I need to kind of like let that truth out. And while we've been having this conversation, thinking about it, I've like felt a lot of guilt thinking of like verbalizing that out loud, but it's true.
Yeah.
And I think even my sister with golf, it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
I have a couple of other single friends who experience the same thing. Yeah. Like, even when we do things that are huge and monumental and mean something, it's kind of flat.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know the answer to the why. You know, we can kind of come up with reasons or, you know, like try to find answers. But I think sometimes everything's complicated and there's nothing that's straightforward. But I think it's a larger social issue of, you know, single women are a very easy projection target.
Yeah.
For everybody's like insecurities and fears.
Yeah.
Or their regrets or their frustrations with things. Yeah. I think it's vulnerable to say that.
Yeah.
But I have to imagine to anybody listening to this, like I can't be alone.
Yes.
In this.
Absolutely.
Or maybe, you know, there's women who have kids but feel that their career never gets acknowledged, right? Everybody's always asking about their kids and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say that about my life, but I also very much agree with, like, I didn't want a baby shower. I was very ambivalent about having children.
Yeah.
You're one of my best friends, Sam, so you know I I will talk a bit about my daughter, but I am not.
No,
she's not. It's not the most interesting thing about me. No. It's one dimension of my personality and my life, and it's one identity I have, but it is not my whole identity.
Yeah, you're identifying, like, you're in kind of this unique space as being a one and done, if you will.
Yep, yep.
And that kind of silos you from the multiples, but then also silos you from the singles and or the married with no kids, right? Yep. Like, it's – but I think you can silo any of those groups and then people within those groups and
And that's why I think we have to look through them and, like you were talking about, we have to look at the context of how they're showing up for us because, if I, like you, you know – didn't understand the context of how my friends with more kids than me or who are stay-at-home moms, like how different their life was than mine, it could be very easy to be like, they're not showing up for me in the same way. But they are within the context of their life. And I think that that is the really important component. And I – I think it's just also interesting because – we can look for reasons to sort of be divided or we can look for reasons to be connected.
But I
also think it is really sad what you were talking about of I wish that there were more built-in ways to celebrate people that weren't just getting engaged, getting married and having children. Like, and have you read Priya Parker's book, The Art of Gathering?
I've heard of it.
It's phenomenal. And maybe – I know we've talked about having Danielle Jackson Bayard on the podcast and she
– we need to get her on.
Yeah, she's amazing with friendship and gathering and community and things like that. But yeah, like she talks about how to create, you know, gatherings with people and the intentionality of that. And I think that I wish and I guess it's like, you know, it's up to us to build it. I can't just sit here and be like, God, just change the everyone else.
I know.
Make career showers a thing or whatever. And that's a big part of her book is like, if you want like deeper relationships and you want more community, like you have to build it. Like you invite people over to your house. I know we talked about, Sam, that like horrifying statistic of like, I forget it off the top of my head of how few people have people over at their house, how few people go to other people's houses these days. And, you know, we talked about it with that episode we did about flakiness and how that, you know, woman had a, I think a bridal shower or something and people didn't show up for her. But we also have to, you know, we also have to be the ones to create some of this if we want it in our lives too.
Well, and I think, you know, going back to what I just said about kind of like this, there's not a ton of fanfare about certain things. I can point the finger right back at me and think of times when people have done things that I probably could have called attention to and and I didn't. Or sometimes assuming like, oh, they know I'm proud of them, whatever.
Yeah.
But I think as women, like we have so much love to give. And I think that's something that I want to do and something that I try to do. And I also understand like being single, you're in like a different mindset with it. Like you don't, you have to, or it's just you staring alone at your wall being like, what should we talk about today? Like, you know, it's there's more effort that has to go into it. But I also know because of that, I've had to be really aware of this idea of like, well, what really are my boundaries? Like, is this actually a big deal to me? Like, do I actually feel this way about things? Like, it forces you to be more reflective and realize like most things really aren't that big of a deal or it actually doesn't put you out that much to do certain things, try certain things, go certain places. And I've also realized that if anybody were to send me a text like that, that would be like goodbye.
Yeah.
Like I'm so far past that stuff. Like if people are just like yelling all the time about how, you know, they can't do this and they can't do that and they have this boundary and they feel that this has been overstepped, like that, this whole like weaponizing conversation to like loop it back into what we were saying in the beginning, it's exhausting to have to live that way. I think maybe that's what I'm getting to, is like living that way, being that hyper vigilant about like, am I being taken advantage of? Is this, what's their intention here? Are they wanting this with me? Like, what's going on? I don't know what to do. Living that way is way more exhausting than just saying, you know what? Friday was a really long day and I have dinner tonight. I'm just going to go to dinner tonight.
Yes.
Like that is way less exhausting. And I 9.5 times out of 10, I end up being perfectly fine the entire time. And maybe sometimes I'll get tired and leave a little bit early.
Yep.
And I go home being really content that I like laid into my social connections. Yep. But the hypervigilance, the like being so concerned about someone overstepping, or did they not listen to my boundary, or did they not pay attention to this? Like that is exhausting. Yeah, and I don't know if you...
Hypervigilance is exactly the word that I would describe it as. And I totally agree. That was one of the biggest things when I was trying to cure my chronic, you know, flakiness, essentially, for lack of a better word, when I was getting sober, is I made a commitment to myself that I like wouldn't question the decision that I made at the time. Like if I had made that decision in good judgment a couple days ago or a week ago or whatever, that this would be fun.
Right.
I was going to honor that previous version of myself that thought that this would be fun. Yeah. Even if in the moment right now, I don't feel like going.
Right.
Obviously there are exceptions.
Yes.
We know this. Yes. But as a general rule of thumb, I think people underestimate the amount of drama it takes to like, especially if it involves rescheduling.
Oh, Lord.
It is like more work a lot of times than just showing up and doing it. And people underestimate that, like, I think we talked about this a week or two ago, that when you show up to something, then like your motivation and your interest can build as you're there. And we're so bad at trying to game out how we're going to feel the whole time versus a lot of times when we start showing up, or even like with the podcast, right? Sometimes we don't know what to talk about and then we start talking and the motivation to keep talking builds.
Yep. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We talk all day. Like not only are we talking to each other, but Amanda is managing a whole empire over there and I'm over here talking to all my clients and whom I love dearly. And sometimes after like a 4 or 5 client day to come here and show up and be like, let's talk more. Like sometimes that's a lot, but then I love it.
Yeah.
And I know
we get
I love
energy
it.
From it.
Yes. Yes. And I think just don't, if you're listening to this and you're like, I don't know what to take from this.
A valid question.
The biggest thing that I would recommend is all of this, like this idea of like trauma dumping and friendship and these concerns of, am I being taken advantage of? Should they have said that to me? Like, did that really bug me? It is okay to like take a step back and maybe not care sometimes. Like to maybe assume good intent. Right?
Yeah.
If they can't do something, but then they follow up with another suggestion.
Yep.
See that as a bid for connection.
Yes.
If they reach out to you and say, hey, I can't do this because this is going on, bid for connection.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. And then if you reach out a second time and they follow through, great. They were allowed to be human the first time.
Yeah.
And to also assume that the people you surround yourself with are not out to get you. Some people end up being bad. Yeah. I've lived that, certainly.
Yeah.
People end up disappointing you in really glorious ways sometimes. Yeah. And it's breathtaking when it happens, especially from people that you trusted
and
went out of your way for. It's hard.
Yeah.
And those situations, if you are showing up and doing your best and surrounding yourself with people who try to do the same, mm-hmm. those situations are rare. Yeah. They happen, mm-hmm. definitely. And friendships fade and change or whatever. But not everything is going to be like disastrous end.
Yeah.
And so I'm giving you permission to kind of like this release this idea that you have to be like super aware to make sure like, oh, like they're listening to my boundaries and they're doing mm-hmm. this and they're doing that and they're being that. Like, just let yourself be a person and let them be a person.
Mm-hmm. Can I also share one of my favorite things? Please. One of my best friends, Eli, says about things. He's so good at showing up for people.
Yeah.
And his motto in life is something to do. It's just something to do. Yeah, it's like amazing. Like, I'll be like, why are you going and doing this? And I'll be like, something to do. Something to do. I've really taken that to heart. And instead of like worrying about like, is this going to be like maximum fun? Is this worth my time? Is it worth all of this? Like, he is way busier than me and more important than me. And he's just like, pickleball, something to do. And I think that's a really healthy approach that I don't take as far as him.
Me neither.
I think it's like a good way of, instead of us being so worried about like maximizing our time, mm-hmm. making sure we're doing everything we want to do, maybe also it's good to, you know, have something to do and things can surprise us.
They can.
Well, we appreciate you all so much. Truly, like, podcasts are so saturated these days and I'm so humbled every day that people actually listen to us.
That people want to be here and come along on this ride. Yeah, it's part of why we expanded into the Substack is because we wanted to be able to have a space to like elaborate on these things even further, because the algorithms don't like this. No. Like, social media algorithms are not built for this. And so that is why we started the Substack, have built the Substack. If you're interested in joining, there's free options. Well, not plural. There's two. There's a free option and a paid option.
Yes.
And if you would like to join either one, it's nuanceneeded.substack.com. You can go check it out. We have all of our long form content over there. We have bonus episodes. I film my pep talks and put them over there. And if that feels like too much, that's okay. If at a minimum, you could rate, review, subscribe, share the show. That would mean the world to us as well.
Yeah, we appreciate you so much. Yeah. And we're just, more than anything, so grateful that you lend your ears to us for the last, 45 minutes.
Thank you.
We will see you next week.
Yes, bye.